Eddie Howe has spent the best part of 20 years at AFC Bournemouth, first as a player and then in his current role as manager, proof that loyalty in football still exists. In 2009, he became the youngest manager in the Football League and rescued Bournemouth from League Two relegation. The club has moved in one direction since, with promotion to the Premier League in 2015 for the very first time. And now, as Howe reaches a personal milestone, he faces the task of keeping them in the English top flight for a fourth season.
The Offside Rule exclusives with Kate Borsay and Lindsay Hooper.
So we're sitting down in one of the boardrooms at the Vitality Stadium for this Eddie Howe Offside Rule exclusive. This episode has been guest edited by ITV sports reporter Amy Lewis. I want to start with your amazing connection to this football club that you're currently managing, AFC Bournemouth. And I think to demonstrate that bond more than anything, towards the end of your playing career, around 2004, the fans chipped together and there was something called the Eddie Share Scheme, if you can fill us in on that, and what happened.
Yeah, it was really strange because I was at Portsmouth at the time. I'd been injured for 2 years, so almost forgotten. As you do when you're injured, you feel a long way away from the action. So I then needed to get some football and I was desperate to come back, to be honest, because I just felt I needed to feel a little bit of love again. I'd lost my way a little bit. And the club, put out some feelers into the supporters to see if they could raise some money, because the club at the time was, you know, in dire straits. So, the fans came good and really felt like they wanted me back. And it was an amazing feeling at the time, as I say, for someone who was so low at the time.
What did it mean to you for that to happen? And have you heard of anything similar happening since? Because I've been having a look. I can't see anything.
No, it felt really, really good from my perspective. And it just didn't surprise me in the sense that the supporters had always been there for me. I'd always felt that as a young kid coming through. I felt the supporters were willing me to do well. And sometimes that is the case when you're coming through the ranks at a team. I felt the club or the supporters were willing me on. But then it's one thing to feel that support and another thing to see them put their hands in their pockets for me to come back at a time when I felt a lot of pressure, actually, because I was thinking they've put their money together and I'm not sure I can live up to, you know, what they want me to be.
Lindsay's there talked a little bit about your playing career, and I think so much has talked about you as a manager. People often forget that you spent many years playing as a centre-half. Can you sum up your playing career? If someone was to ask you in a few short sentences, how would you describe yourself and your playing career?
I don't want to be disrespectful to myself. Hardworking. You know, I was really hardworking. I desperate for success, desperate to achieve. But ultimately, I felt I was limited in my physical attributes. From a centre-half, I mean, you've seen me step into the room. I'm not a giant. I'm 5'11", I think. And that was always a limiting factor for me. But I was probably more of a modern centre-half, and the fact I was probably playing a little bit too early. I think in the modern-day football, I don't think height's such a limiting factor for us as a centre back, because more teams play football now. So I think that was a limiting factor on me, but I gave everything I had to be the best I could be.
You said you didn't want to be disrespectful to yourself. Were you aware, perhaps, some of the, you know, criticism, some of the limits that you describe now? Were you aware of those limits at the time, or was part of your headspace to kind of soldier on anyway?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think my mindset was to soldier on and try and make the best of what I had, and I had other strengths to my bow, and it was to make them more apparent, really. I think my weaknesses, it was a case of trying to hide them and improve them as much as I could, and that's where I worked myself probably to a point where my body just gave way, and then that was sort of where I got my injuries from. It was more through pushing myself to get better that I got the injuries, really.
You speak about injury, and of course that's something now that you have to deal with as a manager as well when you have injured players. Do you feel that there is enough done for players when you're going through an experience like that? Of course you'll have the support in terms of the physical support, but emotionally, could there be more done?
Yeah, I think it's a very lonely place when you're a player. I mean, your career is so short and you're trying to maximise your playing ability. You do push your bodies to the extreme. Got several cases of players who have picked up long-term injuries here. It is a really lonely road, and trying to find solutions for players to fill that void of playing is incredibly difficult, almost impossible. And then if you talk about life after football, you can be seen to be negative towards them and their comebacks, trying to maybe throw other ideas at them at a time when they perhaps don't want it. So it's a really complex thing. I think all you can do as a football club is be there, give them the best support, the best specialist, the best treatment, And then if they are open to talking about other things in the future, then you know, certainly push them in the right way.
You've already touched on the fact that you were very hardworking and had that work ethic from the get-go. I can say you've found your kindred spirit in Kate, because she's a very hard worker as well. Of the Offside Rule podcast, she's the hard worker of us all. But I think that attitude and where you get that from is an interesting starting point, because is this an upbringing? Is it something that's always been in you?
I'd say it's always been in me. I mean, but that must be due to my upbringing, I think. I don't think you're naturally born with a work ethic. I don't know. I'm not an expert on it, and I haven't really delved too much into why I'm the character that I am. I just live every day the way I see it. But I do have a good work ethic, I think. That was aware to me in my playing career, aware to me in my managerial career, that you need that. And in my daily life, to push myself to be the best I can be. And if it's not me, pushing my family members to be the best they can be. I think I got that from a mum who gave everything for their five kids. And I must have seen that and sort of developed that mentality with her.
Does that mean your demands for players are at an exceptional high level? I always fear that boss that stays in until midnight working, because you think, oh, they're going to want me to do the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a different mindset when it comes to my players. I want my players to have the career that I never had. So that's my big push, is for them, really. So they don't have the regrets. I say I have regrets. I have regrets from a different perspective in terms of injuries, but I don't have regrets in terms of what I gave. And I don't want them to look at me as their manager, coach, that I could have done more for them. I don't want them to feel that I let them down in any way. So it's a real big push for my course. I'm doing it for myself as well, but I do feel a big loyalty to them to get the best out of each and every one of them.
That's a huge responsibility, Eddie. You're effectively becoming a father figure, I suppose, for a lot of players at this club, nurturing them, helping develop them, perhaps seeing some of them through their senior years as a player. How frustrating can it get when you see a player of obvious ability, obvious drive, and they don't get it? They don't get what you get. They don't almost behave in the way that you wish they did.
Yeah, it's a huge frustration, because a lot of the boys that you come into contact with are incredibly talented, whether it be physically, technically, tactically. They have a wonderful chance to be, or to leave a real mark in football. That's, I truly believe that. There's not many that you look at and think, well, there's nothing there to develop. But they do need that mindset, and they do need that drive. And the ones that don't have it are an incredibly big frustration. But then for me, I try and change people. You can't give up on anyone. I haven't given up on a player yet. Not give up, try and change people's mentalities is a big part of what we do.
Eddie Howe, the Offside Rule exclusives.
Your age has come into a lot of write-ups that you read about managers, and you're the youngest manager that was in the Football League at the time, and still one of the youngest in the Premier League. Marco Silva's giving you a run for your money now, is he?
Yeah, I mean, the age has been a massive thing. Massive. I mean, my whole interviews when I was probably in my still in my 30s, but the first 5 years were all about my age. It wasn't really a problem. It didn't bother me, but it did get a bit draining, I suppose, after a while. But now that's less and less, and now I think I want it to go back.
Yeah, we all get to that point, right. I think, yeah. In terms of that, I suppose the question is, do you see yourself as a trailblazer?
No, I don't see myself as a trailblazer. I see myself, I don't know how I see myself. It's a good question. No, I've just done it my way. I mean, I think it's very difficult to be something you're not. I've never tried to copy anybody or do something totally different which sets you apart. I've just done what I think is the right thing for me and my players. If that's different, I do think it's slightly different to however anyone else I ever played for. I think that would be clear to me. But I think it's very difficult, I've said this many times in interviews, to know what other clubs are doing, to know how other people manage is impossible for you to find out. So I don't really know the answer to that question.
Let's talk about age again. I'll throw you a little nugget from me. It's not massively football relevant, but it might tie into you a little bit. I left school when I was really young, and I started a career in fashion. Nothing to do with football or broadcasting or anything at all. Started a career in fashion and in retail.
You need to throw in that you ran away to London at 16 as well.
Thank you, Lindsay. Yeah. A vagrant. But I think I'm similar to you in that work ethic meant that I couldn't study anymore. I wanted to go and work. And so I became in this unusual position of being sort of 18, 20 and holding this quite high position within retail, within a fashion company, and flying all over the world and a huge responsibility. And all I got at the time, which I think is what you'll have had a lot, is, oh my God, you're so young and you've achieved so much. How are you doing it? You know, your age. I can't believe how young you are. You kind of appear to be someone so much older. So for me, I'm now nearly 40, so I'm the same age as you. Effectively, Eddie Howe and I are the same person. I'm 39 too. And I look back now at those years and I think, my God, how do you try and keep that pinnacle, keep that excitement going? Because you'd so many people raving about you because of your age. And when you get older, of course, that kind of shine goes. And so where do you take your career to keep that high going, I suppose?
Yeah, that is a problem. And that's a problem I face almost every year because we've set the bar higher every season. And things that people thought were impossible, we achieved. And then people are almost then waiting for you to fail. That's the feeling you sort of get. They build you up and then, okay, let's see what happens now. So we're in that position now where everyone's going, you can't finish higher than ninth in the Premier League. That's, you've achieved your limits. But I've never let it bog me down or worry me. Other people's perceptions, it's very dangerous to start worrying what other people think of you. I think it can only be what you think of yourself. It can only be, you know, ultimately when you analyse yourself, have you worked as hard as you can? Have you given everything to the role that you're doing? And I think that's served us well so far, and I think that's what I'll continue to do.
Is there ever, you obviously work hard, and I know what that feels like. A lot of people listening will know what that feels like. That's a lot to maintain. That's tough. That's hard. It's part of who you are. Is there ever a crash point? Is there ever a point when you think, I need to take a step off this now?
I haven't reached it yet. I mean, there have been times where I think I've been pushed quite close to it, where you think I feel fatigued, I feel tired. But I've never been bored with the job. Never once have I thought I've fallen out of love with football or the dynamics of football or the players. I love that. I love the role that I'm in. And I think that keeps me fresh and that keeps me energised. And I think that's the key thing. If you love what you do, which I obviously do, although there's moments where you hate the job, it pushes you on to more.
Other managers in a similar position would, looking at what you've got, you've had the same or similar budget for the last 3 years that you've managed to keep Bournemouth in the Premier League. And you know the sorts of players you're getting in, the Jack Wilshere's aside, but you do know what you're dealing with in terms of personnel. And a lot of managers in a similar position, they tend to trade up. They take that opportunity that comes and think, well, I'll deal with a bigger budget and I will get that next calibre of player and I will test myself that way. But that's something that at the moment you're saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep testing myself with the same tools. And I think there's a lot of respect that you get for doing that. Do you feel that you do from fans, not just of this football club, but generally?
I don't know. I think that's a difficult one for me because, and I've spoke about this a lot internally, that the, you know, I've been loyal to the real core group of players who have come through the journey with us from League One to the Premier League. I feel that's been an easy decision because they've done so well. So I've never felt let down. They've always improved and pushed themselves and we've gone on the journey together of success. So when people say, oh, you've been very, very loyal, I feel that's been a very much a two-way thing. They've done very well, so I can be loyal. The challenge will be when that success fades, you know, then you're at a turning point, what do you do? Well, I always feel we've tried to trade up, but the players that we've had, the ones that I mentioned that have been part of the squad for a long time, have always moved up with the signings we've made and sometimes improved beyond them. So they stay in the team. So it's not a case that we don't want to look outside to improve. It's just that, you know, the outside's got to be better than the players we've already got.
I think Bournemouth, when you first came into the Premier League, it was survival mission. And already, like you say, just by setting those targets, it feels now that you're becoming a team that want to, maybe you set the target of 10th to 14th. I'm not sure what your individual targets are for this season, but there has to be a point. It's a little bit like when you talk about sprinters and going under 9 seconds. There has to be a point within what you've got that there has to be a, you can't get any faster. And that must be the case here with you can't get any higher. You're going to say to me, well, Leicester City did it.
I'm not going to say that, no. yeah, I mean, I get the question and I sort of understand what you're saying. I think we can't think like that. When you're in the position that we're in, we think we finished ninth. We have to, you know, the league positions and everything like that. It's a difficult one to measure because you just don't know quite how the season's going to unfold and how the table's going to look. The main thing for me is that the principles remain the same. Hard work, talented players, giving everything for the club, for the supporters, leaving everything on the pitch, not becoming ahead of ourselves or complacent. If we hit those things, I think we will achieve our goals. What our goals are, well, that's a difficult one to measure.
when you were fresh into management and even younger, there will have been a crossover with teammates and being a manager. How was that?
That was tough. It wasn't so tough for me. I very quickly, from the day that I became manager, I changed my mindset towards those people. And not that they weren't my friends anymore, but I had to manage them as a manager, not as a friend. I lost a few friendships because of it. People that I've been close with for a long time, suddenly I could no longer pick up the phone to them and have a chat. But that's how it was, and that was the sacrifice of the job. You can't mix the two things if you want to do the job properly, which I did. So I think one day maybe we'll pick up that friendship again, because you know the player-manager relationship dynamic is so difficult. There's lots of different permutations in the team, out the team, new contract, not a new contract. And that naturally will bring friction. So I don't have a problem with that. I was just doing my job.
I hope when you do, you reach out via letter, not Snapchat. Like
I was about to say, we've been to the Kings Park Cafe, and I said, "Oh, do you get Eddie in here?" And he said, "Oh, when he was a player, yes, but not as a manager." And little examples like that, I suppose.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the Cafe when I was a player. used to go there quite a lot. But yeah, I mean, so many sacrifices changes from player to manager. Naturally, they're totally different jobs. The manager's hours are incredibly long and the players are shorter, but that's how it should be.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Offside Rule TV, for exclusive video football content.
When I read about your about-to-be debut season in the Premier League back in 2015, there were a lot of articles written about you, a lot of biography pieces, and they all mention how you're fastidious, how you're well-organised, how you work really hard. There's no stone left unturned. You're kind of master of everything. What's changed in the last couple of years? How have you had to adapt your management style to suit the Premier League? And what lessons, I suppose, has there been there?
Yeah, I've tried not to change my management style too much with the players. I think I wouldn't want to be that manager that takes a back seat, that's not on top of everything on the training pitch, that's not coaching them, that's not the first port of call on a footballing matter. I think it's more surrounding the job that you have to delegate a bit more. I've tried to do that. A medical team now is vastly different from the first time we were in the Premier League, first season. I think scouting is a huge thing that you can't be at every game. And I used to be at games Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Wow. You know, and it was that kind of... was expected, but I don't think I could continue to do that in the Premier League. So I think the scouting, then you have to rely on other people. So there's a whole things around the job, I think, that changed. But
do you still get to walk your dogs? Is a a key question really from me.
Well, yeah, I've only got one dog, but yeah, I do. And that is a form of release for me, without a doubt. Although I probably wouldn't have known that at the start, yeah. But it's as soon as I get in, it's grab the dog and off we go.
So you might have been bonding with Kate over the age thing and being work hard and ethic, but the dogs, it's me. I absolutely love dogs as well. You had a tattoo, didn't you, because of one? Rodney?
Rodney, that's right, Rodney. Yeah. Rodney, strange name, but I seem to like human names for dogs. I've got Eric now.
And named after?
No, not named after anybody. We just like to...
I wish it was Eric Bristow.
And it suits him. So, I'm really fond of animals and dogs, and I think, I wouldn't be without one.
They do give you a lot of light relief. We're all-female football podcast. The women in your life, the women that have influenced you most?
Yeah, my mum, first and foremost, without a shadow of a doubt, and I think she was so important for me to encourage me, to support me in whatever I wanted to do. There was no pressure, there was no ever a forceful hand to make me do anything. It was very much my own freedom, and I really respect that and think that's the right way to go. And whatever I wanted to do, she was there in a car, went night, dropping me off, picking me up. You know, a single mum of five, that's not easy to do. And I never felt that I was without love and support.
It's been one of those defining points in your career. You were at Burnley when your mum passed away, and you had such a close relationship with her as well. You said that it inspired you to achieve more. Was that because you thought these sacrifices that she's made, they're going to count? They're going to count for something?
Yeah, very much so. I think it was very much that thought process. There's also, I didn't know what else to do. It was very sudden. I think that was the thing that really shocked me and hit me, was it was just in a matter of days, really, from being what I've considered perfectly healthy to not here. And I wasn't really prepared for it. And I think I had no mechanism to cope with that, rather throw myself into my work even more. So that was my coping strategy, although I didn't know it at the time. And I'm sort of still doing that now. So that I think my work has been, has helped me deal with that.
Is there an element of you that worries, though, that, that you're going to stop at some point and it will all catch up with you?
Yes, possibly. but, you know, no, I think as time goes on, you deal with certain things. You have time to accept what's happened. But I do think the work has definitely helped. If I wasn't as active as I am, I don't think that would be helpful to me.
Can I ask about your kids? You've got two children, if that's right, Harry, and a younger one as well.
Rocky.
Harry and Rocky, I guess.
See, I'd have thought Rocky was the dog and Rodney was the...
That's right.
It's all mixed up in the Howe household, yes. Isn't it? So two young boys. We've been talking actually recently, Lindsay and I, about women in the media, women in football and kind of how we're portrayed. With kind of one eye on your lads and on how they treat women when they grow up, you being very much your mother's son, having great respect for women because of the example she set. How do you translate that into your family life? How do you ensure that those boys carry that legacy on?
Yeah, I think it's really important how they're developed, how they treat people, their family, their friends. I think it's just basics, manners. Certainly respecting their mum who does... You know, with the hours that I work, it's not easy for her with two kids, and you know, she's a lot of that responsibility is going to fall onto her to mold the boys in the right way. But I've got full confidence that she's doing a great job, and it's not an easy job, especially in the summer holidays, as every woman knows. There, you do get tested to breaking point with the two kids on your own. But no, I'm really happy with how they're developing in all areas.
I'm going to bring you back to more your fatherhood role anyway, and father in terms of football father, because ultimately that is the top of the tree. You are sort of a father to these players as well. I'm going to give you a quandary and you're going to tell me probably, I don't know, let's see what you say. You have the most talented footballer at this football club that can turn a game in a heartbeat. He can win games for you. He has the most talent. He is a Dele Alli of his era that you're going to get in a few years' time. But what comes with him is bad publicity. You have a footballer who doesn't treat women very well, is in the papers in making headlines for all the wrong reasons, and really bringing the game into disrepute. As a manager, as a father, as someone who's been brought up the way that you've been brought up, what's your stance? You've got this player that can be your answer. It can get you the points and keep you in a job, but also the game that you love, it's making bad headlines.
Yeah, I think my view on, you know, you've angled it one way. I think I've dealt with many players of a similar ilk to that, maybe slightly different versions of it, is to always try and educate, guide and help the individual. And that's where I've been, you know, whether it's a technical issue, a tactical issue, I will sit them down and show them videos. And it's the same if it's an off-field problem, disciplinary problem, a respect problem. I think you've got to educate, try and fix. And if you can't fix and you feel like that it's not going to work, then you have to find a different solution. But I'm not a believer in abandoning people, or I always believe in the good in people and not the bad. So I believe people can be changed in certain aspects of their life if they're given the right tools to do it. If you give them the tools and they don't decide to accept, then I think you've got a different problem.
Well, let's turn on a positive spin. Are there people that you've worked with that have surprised you in the opposite way? People that you thought, you know what, I nearly wrote you off and you proved me wrong?
Hundreds of times, you know. And that's been one of the glorious things about this job, is that you do make assumptions. And I make assumptions every day on players, from the training ground to things you see, and you question, not sure it's going to happen. And then one day that player surprises you, and sometimes they don't, and that's an internal frustration. But I've seen some really good stories here that will inspire people, and I think that gives us hope for obviously the future ones that are coming through.
Can you give us any names?
I'm just trying to pick one that's not going to offend. Yeah. I think a really good one is Brett Pittman. And Brett was a lovely, lovely lad. Lovely lad. So there's no problem off the pitch. It was more just trying to get him to the levels that I felt he could be. And when we first started to work with Brett, he did really well, and he moved on to Bristol. And then he came back to us, and there was a case of getting him back to the levels that we felt he was at before. And he was just unbelievable to work with. But a lot of people had written him off, that he could never, you know, score goals at the level that he did it for us. He did it for us in the Championship. and he played a huge part in us getting promotion. And obviously now he's back at Portsmouth and doing well on the South Coast. So it's great to see. But he was one that we persevered with and spent a lot of time with, and you know, me on the training ground with him for a lot of hours, and he got his rewards in the end.
Sometimes you can't do those development projects on your own. It will be a case of it being a process of a few different managers. You know, you might be the middle manager, you might be the manager that started off with a player and hands them over to someone else. In terms of managers that you respect and lean to sometimes, especially in those early parts of your career, who is it that you've turned to for advice, and whether that be on when you've been taking players in or personally developing as a manager yourself?
Yeah, that's a difficult one for me, because I haven't really had that mentor, father figure in the game that has been there for me to guide me or to watch. I just haven't had that person. So I would say my biggest supporter in football has probably been Kevin Bond, in the fact that when I started or ended my playing career, he was the one that gave me my first coaching role. He was the one that saw something in me that could be useful to him when he was managing. I loved working for him and under him. And since we parted as a team, me, Kevin and Rob Newman, who I've got a lot of respect for as well, I've always kept in touch, and we have spoke, and we're close friends. So he's one that I've been very thankful for, you know, how he treated me.
If we're kind of playing fantasy names here, is there one that you'd love to pick up the phone and have a good chat with?
We have that chat.
Yes. It could be past or present.
Yeah, I think the fascinating thing would be to watch all the Premier League managers work. And as I said, that's not something you have.
Can't say all of them, Eddie.
No. I will come on to who I really, you know, there are several that I really respect. But the key thing would be you'd want to watch them work and pick their brains on their ideals of football and why they do certain things. I do respect all of them. I would say Maurizio Pochettino at the moment is, you know, every time we've played against Tottenham, I found their team to be very, very strong. And I think he comes across as, when I've met him, really nice guy. So he's someone I'd like to spend the day with.
Past manager? Someone, if we're talking kind of all-time managers, anyone you think, God, I'd love to be able to pick up the phone?
It's funny, I met Brian Clough when I was, I think it was about 5-6 years old. We were on holiday somewhere, maybe Portland, Weymouth, somewhere like that. And he had his Nottingham Forest team in this room that we went into. I think it might have been a hotel, I'm not sure. But anyway, he was really nice. He sat me on his knee. We had a photo. And from that moment, I was a sort of a Brian Clough fan. So he'd be one that I'd like to talk to.
The Offside Rule exclusives are available to download for free via Audio Boom and iTunes.
I want to talk about AHA.
Oh, good. Get in.
So, I have to say, this is more Kate's cup of tea than mine. But I understand you're a big fan. So is this something that holds resonance for a reason? Is this student days? Is this dressing room music?
No, it's definitely not student days. It's me really finding music as a kid, watching Take On Me video, and just getting hooked. Just got hooked on and let me get this clear, on the music.
Yeah.
Not on the posters or any stuff like that. It was on the music.
Can I ask if, like me, you wore the leather thong on your wrist? Because that's what Morton Harkett did. We all went into our local craft shop and we all bought these lengths of leather thong in all different colours and we wrapped them around our wrist.
Yeah, I can't ever admit to doing that on the radio. I just cannot do that. He's probably my biggest role model out of football. Would be.
Can I ask why he's a role model?
I really like the guy. I don't know him, but I just feel like I mean, he's got an amazing voice, and I think the way the band have conducted themselves, I think they've, you know, when they're interviewed there, they come across really well. So
we were talking about age at the beginning, and next it's a big one. It's 40. How do you feel about that? So you have some men who have a bit of a wobble at 40.
Yeah, I've been beginning to think about it, to be honest, that you think, wow, where's my 30s gone? Where have they just, they've vanished? My 20s I was quite happy in my 20s going through and felt like I was in my 20s for a while. But the 30, because of the management and because you're working such long hours, the days just disappear. And I feel like it's zipped through to 40. So, yeah, here I am.
How do you feel about the prospect of the next decade? Are you a target setter? Are you in the back of your mind already thinking, I'd quite like to be doing that by the time I'm 45 and then that by the time I'm 50?
No, not really. I've never done that. I've never sort of set those targets on age, or I've got to be doing this, that or the other. I just go with how I feel in my emotions at the time. The frightening thought, I think, when you reach 40 is the next one's 50, the next decade's 50, and I'm not comfortable with that yet.
But in manager years, this is still really prime. It's early.
I don't know, but I think the profession's leaning towards younger people, and you look at the Bundesliga and hearing the stat there about the age of the managers in that league. So who knows? I think I could be considered, and that is a fear of mine, that you get one minute you're trendsetter, as you said earlier, or innovative, and the next minute you're considered old news.
Whilst we're reflecting, going back to being a player, was there an ultimate club, if you were going to have a complete pick of any club as a player, where would you have loved to go to?
Everton was my team as a kid. You know, Everton and Bournemouth. I mean, I was living in Amersham, Buckinghamshire, until I was 10, so I was an Everton fan before I moved down here, and then of course I came to watch Bournemouth. So that, if as a player, if I could have moved up, it would have been to them.
You played for the under-21s, England career. We were talking actually about how young players are sometimes forced to make a decision about which country they play for, particularly if they are perhaps like you as a player, good, but maybe realise that you're not going to be a megastar. You often have to make that choice. Do you think it's fair on the younger players of today that they have to pitch their tent internationally so early?
Yeah, I do think that's a really difficult one. I mean, for me, I never had any option or choice, and I always consider myself very proud Englishman, that I wouldn't have been able to switch. I don't feel I'd have been able to switch my allegiance to another country. Easy for me to say with no choice. And as you say, for the players that might not consider themselves good enough to play for England, if they got a chance to play for another country, why deprive themselves of that opportunity? So I do think that's a really tough call to make. You never quite know how your career is going to pan out early on.
It's one of those, where do you draw the line? Because if you say it's too young at 17, for instance, to say, OK, well, I look through my family tree and my grandmother or my grandfather has got Irish roots, I'll play for Ireland, and then you've laid down your gauntlet very early on, and who knows what player you become from 17, as you know, as you've developed, and you've talked about Brett Pittman and what he went through and the development he went through, and so much can happen. Do you think there does need to be a review? Do you think it's something that needs to be addressed, that potentially as the game evolves we have to evolve the rules?
I think it's a difficult one, because I don't think you want to see people changing countries as they get into their 20s. I think that's an uncomfortable thing, and then I think so it's a real difficult decision, I think, for the authorities to make, to actually get that right. I think it's probably right at a younger age. I think that the responsibility of the decision will lay with the player, and he'll have to live or die by that decision, and it sometimes probably can have disappointing consequences if their career pans out a different way.
We've spoken about you entering this new decade and potentially a prime time for you. There were the rumours to do with England a while back. They've simmered down now. Obviously, Gareth Southgate's in the job. But would that be the pinnacle in terms of management jobs for you?
I think it's the pinnacle of jobs. I think I've said that many times, but I don't think necessarily it's right for Gareth's a young guy as well. I don't know. It doesn't feel right for me at this moment in time, because I'm very much hands-on every day and like that responsibility of the day-to-day work. And I think the international job is totally different. You get the players for a short period of time, then you don't see them again for a long period of time. And of course you have the tournaments and the intensity of those. But I do think it's totally different to club management, and I enjoy that side.
What was your thought when you were linked with that England job so early on? Were you secretly flattered and quite happy, or were you thinking, slow down here, I haven't even started my management career, you know, haven't even nearly got to where I want to get to?
Well, I couldn't believe it to start with, because that is exactly how I felt. I didn't feel I deserved to be linked with the top job. So yeah, it felt way too early, and it felt like I wasn't even prepared to be, mentally for me, prepared to be considered for that role. I felt I'd got so much to achieve, prove, learn before being linked to that job.
Does that include other clubs, do you think, ultimately? I know you don't want to look beyond Bournemouth, which is fair enough, but do you think that if someone's looking at you for the England manager, that they would want to see a few more clubs on your management CV?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think more experiences, I think, from my perspective. So becoming more battle-hardened in the Premier League, you know, learning more about the game, learning more about the international game, I think. A whole vast array of things.
Does it also go to show that there's this gaping hole when it comes to English managers? And you had a lot of pressure on your shoulders anyway from being such a young manager, but you've also had that pressure and added pressure of being English.
Make me feel bad.
I basically want to walk out of this room and I'm going to be like 10 stone heavier just from sitting next to you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it proved to me, that, you know, how am I getting linked with this job? And probably due to the fact that there's not many English guys managing in the Premier League, simple as that. And yeah, with that does become the, you know, the expectation, and people will look at you and, but as I said earlier, all you can do is do the job to the best of your ability and let everything else take care of itself. I do, and everyone would love to see more English British guys managing at the top level. I think that's natural, but the power of the Premier League, the money in the Premier League, they're going to bring the best people here, and that includes the managers. So it's a challenge for us all to improve.
What do you think can be done? You did it.
I think, well, I can only speak about my way, and that's proving myself at a lower level. And I had to, you know, I was well aware I probably had to bring Bournemouth to the Premier League to get that chance. The trouble is now in the Championship, you're seeing a lot of foreign managers in the Championship as well. So that league's not a breeding ground for English coaching talent either. So, it, you know, maybe potentially it might get harder.
Do we see enough go abroad? We see so many foreign managers come here.
Well, the difficulty is the money's here with the Premier League. So that money brings the best. That brings people from outside of this country. The opportunities for English coaches to go the other way is a lot more difficult. But I do think that is an avenue for, because they can learn so much from the other countries and how they do things. So, you know, hopefully we'll see more go out.
Should we finish this on the 40th birthday again? You know, a nice kind of happy note. Do you know how you're going to celebrate it? Are there any plans in the Howe household for your 40th?
I don't even know what day it is. I mean, have we got a game? I don't know. We have.
Yeah,
we've got a game. Oh, okay. So that's where our Burnley
are. Is it
here? Burnley are here. Well, there you go. That's irony, isn't it? So hopefully, you know, the aim is, regardless of the birthday, is to get 3 points. And, you know, that would be enough for me.
If you could have anything gift wrapped for your 40th, what would it be?
Ronaldo.
Yeah, well, it does get difficult. You're probably in the same position as you get older and you think you have birthdays and you just don't. There's nothing that you really want, and you might be different. You might go, yeah, there's loads that I want. But I always struggle to think of anything that I want, because I just think, you know, I know it's cliched, but I have the things that I need. I just want my family to be healthy and happy.
The Offside Rule Exclusives is produced by Offside Productions and edited by Lucy Lavery.
A huge thank you to Eddie Howe and AFC Bournemouth for this Offside Rule exclusive. You can enjoy a bit extra over on our YouTube page, The Offside Rule TV, where we continued the chat with Eddie a little longer. Head over to the channel and hit subscribe, as we'll be posting videos from all of our Offside Rule exclusives on there each month. We will have a brand new guest in our new podcast, which is out on the 1st of October. Goodbye for now.